When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 220 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. It's been a lovely, lovely week, hasn't it? Nice and relaxed. It was lovely watching the game on Friday, not being overly concerned with the outcome. I'm sure we'll all agree on that. And it is nice to be at the back end of a season, not thinking who we playing next, where the points coming from. Probably the first time in about 3 years. So it's made a nice change, that's for sure, this week in terms of the on-field situation. But joining me and Pete this morning, it was on a couple of months ago, I think it was post-West Ham, the 3-1 defeat at Goodison. And that is Everton Fan Advisory Board member Paul McMonies. And Paul, great to have you back on the show. Always a pleasure to speak to you, And before we dive into the on-field stuff, briefly, obviously we see more and more talk around this ongoing protracted ownership change with 777. We had another payment received from them this week of £20 million. That was late, of course, which then brought about a lot of stories in relation to administration and things like that. But if I can come to you just in regards to, obviously, as a fan advisory board member, you did write to 777, amongst others, a little while ago, and got a response, obviously a very sort of, not vague response, but a typical response in terms of, they won't say very much, but we'll speak to you when the takeover goes through. What are your thoughts on the ongoing situation now, given we're now a couple of months down the line from when we last spoke? It's been a little while since, obviously, they replied to the letter as well. What are we, around 8, nearly 9 months into the whole process as well? What's your current thoughts on the situation?
Well, it's very similar to the way it's been all the way through, where we don't really know what's going on. You've got all of these rumours and obviously these extremely worrying stories. I mean, they've been worrying stories about them since day one. So as a fan, that's obviously extremely worrying. From the fan advisory board point of view, We've sort of had to try to take a middle line. I know we've been accused of supporting 777 or not kicking up as much of a fuss as we should have done about them. But we've got to take a bit of a line on that, really, as a fan advisory board. Because I mean, if they're coming in, we need to be on civil terms with them. Really, you can't be shouting out about them before they've even started. We don't really know what they're going to be like until they get in. But as a fan, I think, extremely worrying. And the more and more stories that you hear coming out, the more worried you get. As you say, we have written to them. Dave Kelly, our chairman, met with Don Jansfield from 777, right back at the beginning of all this, at the end of September, which I believe was about 10 days after they had, well, bought the club, effectively, because I think it was September 17th, based on our calculations, when they signed the actual deal with Mashiri to buy the club. And then, you know, told us it's going to be 12 weeks, which we thought was going to be the beginning of December. And then it just went on and on and on. And that's where it's been at, really. So we wrote to 777 and the Premier League and Mashiri at the end of March. And yeah, we got a sort of standard response back saying, look forward to answering your questions when we can, when we're in. And is that going to happen? I don't know. We're still in limbo when it comes to that. But as you say, at least on field, the limbo isn't affecting things that much anymore because we know we're safe. So that's the main thing. I think obviously the Evertonian in the streets been worried about. But as a fan advisory board, we obviously need to be looking at bigger issues. And it's mad to think that the takeover of the club and the change of ownership of the club hasn't been the number one issue. It shows what a basket case of a season we've had when that's been sort of second, third, fourth on a lot of people's lists. It's crazy.
And you're trying, you know, I know myself personally, I try to put it to the back of my mind because of the on-field situation and the fact that, you know, all of our energy has had to go towards what we were seeing on the pitch and obviously supporting the players and the manager and trying to get us over the line, which obviously we did last weekend. But then when you see the stories that come out again yesterday in regards to them potentially getting done for fraud, which is, you know, in terms of the figures that are being quoted and potentially, you know, using money and properties and things like that, which aren't there. So it was effectively sort of using that in regards to borrowing further money. It's frightening, really, isn't it? We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of what this potential case is gonna discuss. And when you have those kind of stories, you hear stories that we've heard all the way through. You know, the likes of Josimar and people like that have gone through many stories and investigatory work and things like that to look into the background of 777 Partners and. It seems like, you know, it's a huge, huge horror story. There's a lot of red flags. And it's difficult because, obviously, as fans, we don't really want to be getting involved with this kind of stuff, to be honest. I've said this before, you know, whether it be the financial side in terms of profits and sustainability, whether it be the ownership side of things, you could trust that people who own the club will have the club's best interests at heart. But when you see all of these stories coming out, as I say, the latest one was only yesterday. There are so many red flags, and it just appears that for whatever reason, these are the ones which, you know, we are looking at being our new owners. And it's difficult to really, and I've, as I say, I've found it easier to sort of not get overly involved and not think about things too much. But now that we're all right and we're not gonna go down this season, you do then start to switch your attention to this. And for me, I'm hugely alarmed by what I read and what I see. And obviously, my interest is Everton Football Club, and I want the best for my football club. And I'm not too sure, given the stories that we're seeing yet again, that these people are the best buyers for the football club.
Yeah, I think that's been the case right the way through. I mean, as I say, from a fan point of view, I'm the same as you. I mean, I've been. I was sort of behind the scenes a little bit about 20 years ago or so, you know, as I think I mentioned before, when I went to AGMs and EGMs in the early 2000s. And then I just sort of gave up on it because I just wanted, same as everyone, just want to go to the match. Just want to go to the match. I don't want to know about spreadsheets and balance sheets. I want to know about team sheets, you know. That's what it should be about. It should be about football. But certainly for the last few years, we haven't been allowed to do that. And from the fan advisory board point of view, We've had sort of a three-prong sort of thing, really, where when you're looking at the club, you have to look at on-field and off-field. And then we've also been trying to improve the fan advisory board internally as well, our own communication and the way that we're putting ourselves out there and trying to build, because, you know, the fan advisory board is still very new. So, and, you know, just this season alone, I only joined the fan advisory board last summer. So we started when we've got an interim board in place, and we've got, you know, a sort of interim CEO, and we've got, you know, Mishiri and his mate are sort of on there as non-executive directors and that lot. And then as we move into the season, we then have the chairman die. So we've had no chairman since October. We've had an interim board since last June, nearly a year, which I'm told is pretty much unheard of in a company our size, to have an interim position and have no chairman literally since October. Is a bit of a basket case. But when you then sell the club, so it's like, well, every time we've spoken to the club about, you know, when are you getting a chairman in? Are we getting at least an interim chairman? And they're just like, well, everything's on hold because they're expecting this to be done. And I think it's important to point out that when we talk about the club, there are many different levels to that, really, because, as I say, the people that we're meeting with are sort of at the very top of the club now. And when we first started, they weren't, because Mishiri was above them, and Kenwright was above them, really, as well. Now Mishiri sold the club, so he's out the door. Kenwright's literally passed away, so he's not around anymore. So you've got the likes of Colin Chong, the interim CEO, who is effectively now at the top of the club, actually running that, which is not a position that he was expecting to be in. And you know, he didn't. I would imagine when he took on the role, obviously he didn't know that Mr. Kenwright was going to pass away, and he didn't know that Mr. Mishiri was going to sell the club. So it's kind of like, well, you know, that's where it's been. So they've had this void at the top of the club, and that void is still there 9 months later. So we need closure on this, and we need to move forward. But obviously we've got to move forward in the right direction. And as I said, the uncertainty about the ownership side of things, and about what Mishiri's intentions are. You know, we've heard of possible other buyers, whether there's other people interested or not. And you're right exactly about, and we've had to try and predict this as fan advisory boards, is what are the fans going to be caring about? Because once the 10 points was taken away, everyone's attention went on that. And we, you know, the 1878s started, you know, getting the fans whipped up, and we started trying to, you know, the enemy then was the Premier League, and that's what everyone was focused on and doing that. And then once the hearing comes out, and then we get things, you get hit with another one, and then we got the appeal, and then we got that, and all the way through, we've always had these sort of battles. And we've known for the last few weeks that as soon as we got safe, then that's where the focus is going to be, 777 and the ownership of the club. That's where it's got to be. So we've had to try and predict that and try and be on top of that, which is why we were writing to them at the end of March, because we knew we're getting to the end of the season, and we fairly much knew we were going to get blanked. But it's one of those situations where you have to ask the question even when you know the answer, because at least we can say as a fan advisor, well, we've done our bit, we tried, and we've asked the right questions. And I think we have, but we kind of knew we were going to get blanked by it. But, you know, all we can do is just keep going. We're supposed to be meeting Mr. Mishiri in the last week of the season. We've been trying since we wrote this letter, probably about 6 weeks before we'd written this letter, and he'd agreed in principle to meet with us, and then that went on and on and on. It's now that it's going to be after the end of the season, which, you know, great. We could have done with talking to him before now, but as it stands at the moment, we're supposed to be meeting him in that last weekend of the week of the season. So, you know, we might get a few more answers then. Who knows?
You know, fingers crossed, because obviously the last week of the season as well should see our appeal hearing, shouldn't it, for the second point deduction at the same time. Another farcical situation, but that's a conversation obviously for another time. But Pete, I'll bring you in at that point, because obviously you did mention last week on the show in regards to 777. We briefly brought it up, but what's your gut feeling now, given the fact that we've had another story, as I said just then, in regards to this fraud case, and, you know, using basically things that he didn't own or control as collateral? You know, it's a crazy set of circumstances yet again. What's your gut feeling now going forward? Do you still feel that they are going to be the chosen ones, and they are going to take over the club?
I really hope not. I mean, I joked, didn't I, last week, that, you know, someone might come in at the 11th hour. I think I made a quip about a Tim Cahill conglomerate that you know might save the day. But I felt the same about 777 since day one. You know, they're not football club owners. You know, they're a certain type of business. They've got a certain type of business model. And Everton Football Club and the Pendant Stadium, it represents a cash cow. They need us more than we need them, which might sound perverse to say, given the situation we're in, but that's exactly why Everton are attractive to them, because they can use us to funnel an awful lot of money, and then they can get out and leave. And when you look at the business model outside of football, that's exactly what they do. They funnel money into businesses that they allow to fail, and then they move on. Leave behind them a wake of what seems like, you know, destruction, and seem to be able to get away with it. So I'm really, really concerned. It feels like the last thing we need after everything we've been through is kind of another crisis. But we are where we are, and I think you touched on something really interesting a few moments ago, Mike, when you said, you know, usually as a fan base you'd be able to, you know, trust in the owners to make the right decision and kind of sit back and watch what occurs through the process. But there's been a massive loss of trust, hasn't there, between Everton and I think Farid Moshiri in particular over the last few years. And I think fans have learned that they can't do that. And I think the Everton fan base do feel a responsibility, don't they, to, I think, investigate what's going on and to raise attention to it, and I think almost to do everything that they can to make sure that, you know, if 777 aren't the right owners for us, that, you know, we do everything we can to raise that to the Premier League and other people that might be involved in that process. But it's extremely worrying. It's really, really concerning. And I think, like you, I just hope that this doesn't drag on, you know, throughout the summer to the point where we're not able to do business, or we're having to kind of conservatively sell some of our best players because we don't know what's around the corner. As usual, it's the story of the past few years. We're crying out for stability, aren't we? I just don't think 777 are the answer. I really don't. But what's the alternative?
Well, that's the frightening thing, is we just don't know, do we? That's the thing. We've got to see how this plays out. Hopefully, there's a remedy very quickly down the line. But as a fan base, we just don't know. But in terms of reflections, while we're speaking about, obviously, in regards to the fan advisory board, Paul, before we go on to the Luton game. It's been some season for you, really, hasn't it, in terms of a fan advisory board, you know, in terms of what you've had to deal with from a variety of things. Obviously, we talk about there's been 2-point deductions, there's 2 appeal hearings, there's, as you say, the Premier League very much the enemy for a long, long time. You've got the off-field situation with 777. We've even got the situation around FA Cup replays being scrapped, and though obviously the fan advisory board came out with the statements on that as well. It's been some season for you, hasn't it, as a collective? And I don't think many clubs, fan advisory boards, will ever be in the same situation that you found yourselves in this season.
Yeah, it's been a mad season. Even before this all kicked off, when I first joined last summer, I was sort of 50-50 about doing it. I didn't really know, whether it was a genuine sort of thing, not from the point of view of the people that were on it, but whether it was actually just lip service from the Premier League to basically, you know, try and fend off the independent regulator, which is another one that you can lump in with that as well, as another thing that we've been trying to be outspoken about as a fan advisory board as well, which is, you know, for the whole of football, really, not just about Everton. It's been an absolute basket case of a season. It's been one thing after another. The analogy I've always used is that it's like, you know, Everton's a house on fire and we've got a water pistol. And where are we going to point it? Even though, we can't really do that much, but we can try and ask the questions. So we tried very early on to engage the fans and try and find out what the fans wanted us to be focusing on, because that's what the idea of it is, you know. When I joined, I was, you know, the fan advisory board got a bit of a bad rep in the first season, and they were seen as a by some as a mouthpiece for the club, and about that they would, you know, that they were sort of in cahoots with the club just because of the way that it sort of come together. And a lot of people just see acronyms every here and there about, you know, the fans forum and this. They don't really know what these groups actually are. And I was pretty much the same as that. So I had to do my sort of research to join. And we have elections every year as well. We got elections this summer. So if anyone fancies joining the fan advisory board and the madhouse that it's become, I've got to get re-elected. So I'll throw my hat in the ring now and let you know that I'll tell you what the analogy is. It's I'm very much like Sean Dyche, where I've had this period where it's just been mental, and I've just literally been firefighting since day one, and got X amount done, but I've got so much more that I want to do. And I've got to be up for election again this summer, but I desperately want to be on the fan advisory board again next season, because I say we've managed to get, you know, progress things, you know, to doing things like this. You know, we weren't taking part on podcasts last year. We have drop-in sessions before every home match in St. Luke's now, where people can come and actually physically talk to us. And hopefully we've managed to raise the profile of the fan advisory board to the point where people can see that we are, you know, representative of the fans. We're independent, which is unbelievably quite a big thing, it seems, because the Premier League have brought these in this year, where every club has to have a fan advisory board. And the more and more we're talking to them, the more and more we're finding out that a lot of them, most of them, in fact, have club employees on their fan advisory board, as like permanent members, not that they're just meeting with. And, you know, some of them, they don't really get a say in it. Fulham, for example, the club have just said, yeah, we'll sort out the fan advisory board. You know, all these supporters trusts and that lot are saying, well, yeah, where's our involvement in it? They're just like, yeah, we'll do it, don't worry. So it's you know, we're very, very fortunate to be able to have formed an independent fan advisory board, where we are literally, you know, 11 fans, that the club has no say in who is on the fan advisory board and who isn't. The fans vote for them. We've got representative members that come from the likes of the Disabled Supporters Society and the Heritage Society. They nominate people to come on it. So, you know, that's coming up this summer. The overall a basket case of a season that has made it really, really difficult for us to try to focus on what the fans want us to focus on, and to try to see what the key issues are. Because, as I say, there's The way I've looked at it, and I'm going to use my analogy, my bridge analogy again, is we're trying to build this bridge between the club and the fans. And that the gap between the club and the fans was enormous after last season with Headlock Gate and all of that. That you know, there's a massive void between them. So we've been trying to build this bridge across, and we're trying to keep the fans with us. So we're trying to feed back to the fans and let them know. And we've got these other fan advisory boards that we're trying to help out as well, because we're all in it together, and we want football as a whole to be better, and for fans as a whole to have a voice. So we've tried to hold these fan involvement sessions, where we've done them online, we've done them in person, where people can have their say as to what happens, and that will be an ongoing process, and that's the way that we sort of want to work with these. But it's a fairly thankless task, but it has to be said, we had quite a few people coming into the drop-ins and saying thank you, which is nice. So we are getting a little bit more, and we're finding a little bit more that if, you know, we put something out on Twitter, which is our main outlet for our stuff. It used to be the case that, you know, you'd get, you know, anything you put out, you'd get people shouting at you and saying, well, you should have done this and you should have done that. What we're finding more and more is that we're getting other fans are defending us. We aren't having to reply to that and say, well, we have done this and we have done that. Other fans are jumping in because we've publicised what we're doing, and other fans are defending us in effect, if you are, and saying, no, they are doing this and they have done that. So it's been an extremely challenging year, but I think we're quite happy with you know, the level of involvement that we managed to have. But in an absolute void of, you know, of information, really, because I say the relationship with the club's been all right, but you haven't really got anyone in charge effectively, you know, that we can work with. So we're looking forward to some stability as well, and being out of this massive limbo that we're in. And the ownership is just part of that. And just one little thing before I pass back over to you as well, that we've got one of the members that joined last summer with me as well, Paul Rigby. And he's been living over in Delaware in America for like 20 years. And there's been court cases with 777 in Delaware. So he was very aware of what was going on with them as well. So it's not as if this is sort of like a new thing. From the first minute they were involved with us, they already had all of these sort of things going on. So although this story yesterday seems like a massively big one, when you look at the articles on Yoshimar, and again, just for clarity, a lot of people think Yoshimar's a bloke. He's not. That's not the Brazilian right back. It's not him. but Yoshimar is actually a Norwegian news site, and they are involved in investigative football journalism. That is what they do as a website. So when you see people slagging them off and saying, oh, these seem to have it in for 777, they don't. That's just what they do. So the two main journalists, Paul Brown and Philippe Auclair, are the two guys that have mainly been writing about them. And because they've been shared a lot in the media and they're highlighting quite a lot of people think, oh, there's some sort of, you know, conspiracy going on here. They're just two journalists that write for a football investigative journalism site. So that's why they're doing this. They do it for loads of other, you know, football issues as well. It's not just that they've got it in for 777 or something like that. So, you know, people need to be a bit, aware of that as well, I think. But there is a lot of bad stories about them, and it's definitely worrying.
It is, and there hasn't been, I don't think, any good publicity at all in terms of 777. But the hope is that this is rectified very, very quickly, because we can't afford to have all this off-field stuff impacting our summer plans. You know, it's already going to be, I think, a difficult summer in terms of what we have to do financially. I think we all sort of understand that. We all seem to think that we're going to lose probably Jared Branthwaite and Amadou Onana. I think common sense probably dictates that we will do. We hope, probably Branthwaite more than Onana for many, many fans. We would love to keep him. What a season he's had. You know, yet again showed on Friday with that block at the end, how important he is to this side. But we've got to be realistic. And assuming we get a very, very good price, which I think we will, we've got to make sure it's reinvested correctly and not just going on bills is the major concern. So obviously let's see how that plays out. But it's been, we're going to discuss obviously the Luton game. Obviously it finished 1-1. Certainly wouldn't have liked to have gone there needing something on Friday. I think it would have been a totally different affair. I was sitting there with me slippers on, a nice cup of tea, just relaxing. I had no kind of tension, anxiety, nerves. My wife said to me, I've never seen you so relaxed watching an Everton game in my life, because normally I'm tearing my hair out. I'm on the edge of my seat and I'm moving around the living room. So it shows you how nice it can be to watch football in a relaxed state of mind. But came away with a 1-1 draw. Sean Dyche, Paul, how well has Sean Dyche done in this madness of a season? You know, you've mentioned obviously all the off-field stuff there as a fan advisory board member. We know the off-field stuff is what we all concentrate on a lot of the time. And Sean Dyche is coming for criticism when we went on that run where we didn't win a game for about 3.5 months. And, we got safe last week. We got a draw against Luton on Friday, which didn't mean a great deal, but always important, I think, to keep on picking up points and keeping the field goal factor going. How well has the manager done to operate in these kinds of circumstances?
Yeah, I think that's what you have to look at. I spoke to Julia Bold that did the documentary podcast that they did for the BBC, because she was behind the scenes throughout a lot of that when Sean Dyche came in and saw a lot of that going on. And again, it's that void at the top of the club, really, when Dyche and Kevin Thelwell are doing stuff that they shouldn't really be doing. I think there's a lot of stuff that was obviously going on behind the scenes, and Dyche has started to allude to that a little bit more in his press conferences since we've been safe. I think you can see that the pressure's off him a little bit more, and he can be a little bit more relaxed. But he has literally been the face of the club, because the club haven't been saying anything. Mashiri hasn't been saying anything. And he's getting asked in press conferences all the time, what do you think about the points deduction? And he's pretty much like the rest of us as fans. There's nothing I can do about it. I wasn't here when it happened. I've been handed down what I've been handed down, and I've just got to deal with that. And again, you look at that in any job that you do, if you're in a, you know, whatever you do as for a living, if you're working hard and you're getting good results in your department, for example, but then the company overall is going to hell in a handbasket, and there's, you know, somehow the results that you're producing are getting taken away from you in the way that Dyche's points have been taken away from him, then that's massively, massively demoralizing. And I think the other thing that you got to consider, and remember that the way that trauma works, your body lets you forget trauma, yeah? But throughout this season, it's been incredibly traumatic because we've been in limbo because of the way these processes have worked with this points deduction. We've been in limbo for an awful lot of this season. If you look at, for example, the gap between when we appealed and the first charge and when we were charged with the second charge, there's a gap in there where we still had 10 points taken off us, and we thought we had another charge, which based on the information that was available at that time, because Forest hadn't had their hearing, we hadn't had our second hearing, the information at that time, the first outcome said that 6 points is a minimum. So at the time, we're thinking, well, we're going to have at least 16 points off us, and we've ended up with 8. So that's, you know, the fact that you had that worry thinking, well, we're going to have 16 points off us here. That's massively, massively stressful for us as fans and for Dyche and the players as thinking, because they're thinking, well, there's another 6 points coming here. So every time you play a game, you're thinking, well, what do I do with this now? Because you don't know. And this is not just an Everton thing, by the way, because of the farcical way this is done. Luton, Burnley, going into a match, you don't know what you need to do because you don't know what would be a good point. And what would be, well, I've got to win this game because, you know, I don't know where I'm at. When there's no points deductions happening during the season, which I think should be the case, you should never have points deductions, you know, and appeals and that lot. And these get taken off and then they get added back on, because it doesn't just affect the teams that are getting the points deductions. It's everyone around them, because you don't know what you've got to aim for. And that's not fair. If you're going to have points deductions, do them at the beginning of the season. They start on a minus number, and then everyone knows where they are, and nothing changes again until next season. They've done what they've done, because that limbo has absolutely killed us. And I think it's impossible to judge Sean Dyche and his team on this basket case of a season. I think it's very, very difficult to actually say, well, he should have done better, he should have done this, and he should have done that, when they've had 8 points taken off them, and yet we're still safe with 3 games to go. You look at that, the last 3 years, you know, I don't think we'd have coped with that. I don't think Lampard would have coped with that. I don't think Benitez would have coped with that. I don't think the club at the time would have coped with that. We would have had, if you've had, you know, Mashiri and Kenwright still involved, you would have just got a load of bluster about, oh, it's all fine, it's all great, it's all that. We didn't even get that. All we got was Sean Dyche at press conferences having to answer these questions every week. And I say, yeah, we've all seen that the performances often haven't been great. We've all seen that, you know, sometimes his substitutions seem to be odd or lacking, or, you know, the actual game changing, where we're all sat in Goodison thinking, this needs changing. You need to do this, you need to do that. And he doesn't tend to make substitutions till late on and stuff like that. And yeah, there's always bits and bobs that you can point out with him, but you have to look at the environment in which he's working and the outcome that he's got. That's all you can look at, really, I think. And I think that it's, as I said earlier on, it's unfair. He's got to be given another crack of the whip, because, again, we don't know how it's going to turn. We don't know what the summer's going to look like. We don't know what next season's going to look like. But I think it's really unfair of him to just say, well, here you go, here's your Everton career. You've just worked in an absolute basket case and you've kept us up. Thanks very much. Bye. I just don't think you can do that. I don't think it's fair.
And I think we're all assuming as well, by the way, that it'll be Everton saying to Dyche, oh, thanks very much, see you later. He might say I'm off.
Yeah, well, I've got a sort of theory about that a little bit as well. And I think it came across in that BBC podcast that I mentioned earlier on. And it might sound a bit odd, but we all know what you know, football people are like. And Dyche is a football person, let's remember, yeah? I think Ian Wone, being an Evertonian, is actually a fact. I do genuinely think, and I know people will say, oh, that's nonsense, Ian Wone and Sean Dyche are exceptionally close, you know? That's what came across in that podcast. They shared a room together when they were players. They've been lifelong friends, you know, godfathers to each other's kids, all of that lot. They are exceptionally close, yeah? And Ian Wone spoke on that podcast about his excitement when he was like, is this true? Are we going to Everton? He was like, made up, you know, because he's like, well, dang it. Obviously, he's got a double-edged sword with it because he's thinking, shit, I don't want to mess this up, you know, I need to, and it, from a family's point of view and stuff like that. But I genuinely think that Sean Dyche is the sort of person that is going to, he clearly likes a challenge, and Christ, we're a challenge. So I think he will see this as, you know, he wants to prove himself in a better environment. And, you know, who knows whether next season will be a better environment or not, but we will be a Premier League club going into Bramley Moor, you know, hopefully. And that, to be honest, that's the situation the club is actually in. And that's how low our expectations are got. For me, I've been saying for most of this season, if we can get into Bramley Moor as owners without someone having sold the stadium and us renting it, yeah, as a Premier League club, those basic things will do for me. And that's ridiculous, because, you know, the motto, we should be hoping for a lot more than that. But the absolute basket case of a situation that we are in, and financially, I think you're absolutely right about, you know, the fans need to be realistic about the fact when they're talking about, you know, signing Sammy Smodic from Blackburn, or signing him and signing them and saying, oh, you need to get rid of Gomez, you need to get rid of Ashley Young. That is not this summer. That summer is not going to be this, because we have not got the finances to be doing very much at all. Clearly have not got the finances. And even if we do manage to sell the likes of Onana or any sort of big players, hopefully not Branthwaite, but again, how much of that money is going to be available for squad building? I don't think there's going to be much of it. I really don't. So I think it's going to be a massive, massive summer for us. But, you know, we've had a massive, massive, you know, we had a massive March, we had a massive January, we've had a massive, it's been so many times this season we've had, this week is an absolutely key week in the history of Everton. That's been the case all season, you know. So I personally think that Dyche should be clearly be given more time, and I think he will want to stay as well. I think that just for the Ian Wone factor, if nothing else, and that might be a little bit romanticising of it, but I think that's what I get from him. Seems to be a man of integrity, so, you know, hopefully. But, you know, if he did decide to bin it, who could blame him, really? You know, no one wants to work in an environment like this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Listen, if any football club can break Sean Dyche, it's Everton. You know,
yeah, we would.
But he's done. You know, we've discussed it many times. He's done terrifically well. You know, 45 points he's won this season. It's some turnaround from last season. You know, even with an 8-point deduction, we're still 11 points clear of the relegation zone. You know, two games to go. Incredible from the manager, his team, and the players. To be fair, and we've said that time and again, but obviously, like I said, you know, we look back on Friday, and I think it was great. We alluded to it ourselves in the last couple of weeks, the way Sky had put five games on the spin on the telly, being televised from Chelsea onwards, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin alluded to it after the game in terms of, you know, the fact that, you know, the players are aware, you know, that Sky were expecting a certain relegation 6-pointer, and it didn't go their way. So I think it was nice. It was nice to watch the game and feel relaxed. And we were chatting to you on the game, weren't we, Pete? And, you know, it wasn't probably the usual high-octane conversations, really, because we didn't really care, let's be perfectly honest. But I did say before the game, I said to you and Lee, I'd take a point here. I'd be quite happy with the points. They are fighting for their lives, Luton. We know going forward they can cause problems. Defensively, obviously, we've been good. Everton, of course, the most stonewall of stonewall penalties, and it took them about half an hour to decide that it was a penalty. But Everton did what they sort of had to do, didn't they? We were professional in our approach. To be fair to the manager, I think he made five subs during the game, the first time I've ever seen him do that. So we saw a few changes along the way as well. Good to get, obviously, Dominic Calvert-Lewin back after that game out against Brentford. Got on the score sheet yet again, 4 goals and 5 for him. It was just a game that, you know, we probably all expected it went the way we probably all expected in terms of how Luton approached the game, how we approached the game. But nice just to not really care.
Yeah, definitely. But do you know what? I thought Sean Dyche hit the nail on the head in his post-match, where he said in previous seasons, that's the type of game that, you know, we would have kind of capitulated and gone under in. And we didn't. And Luton have been superb at home this season. And I mean, we've said it so many times, you can never write them off. You can be 3-0 up, away at Luton, and they're still in the game. You know, they don't give up, and they've got a really effective way of playing and getting at teams. And I mean, look, fair play to them. They really identified kind of our weaknesses, didn't they, in terms of the fullbacks keeping the ball away from Tarkowski and Branthwaite. And they absolutely hammered Branthwaite all across the pitch. You know, they clearly targeted him as someone to try and take out of the defence, potentially for mopping up the second balls as well as the direct balls in. But, you know, their approach was so effective against us. But we've come out with a point, haven't we? Again, in the type of game that you might easily lose 2-3-1 in previous season. So, in that regard, I would have taken that all day long before the game. I thought we played really well. I thought Chimiti, again, another little cameo. He's just got something about him, hasn't he? He looks like a football player. He's confident for his age, puts himself about. I was really impressed with the way he approached the game. Not to load him with pressure like we often do with young players at Everton. But yeah, I'm quietly hopeful for his development, over the next couple of seasons, and hope we see, little bit more and more of him. Because I think that could be a little jewel on our bench, and hopefully works his way into the first team. But I'm completely with you. It's nice to watch a game of football and not be on tenderhooks, and not be expecting it to come kind of crashing down in some way.
It was probably it was the first game, at the back end of the season in the last few years that I've not really sort of cared too much and haven't felt nervous and haven't felt anxious watching the game. And I think that's testament to the work that's been done, by the manager and the players to go into that game. As I say, that Sky wanted to be a relegation 6 points. It was all eyes were going to be on that game in terms of Everton are going to need something, Luton are going to need something. And in the end, it was all null and void. And, Luton 3 points would have been massive, especially given what happened yesterday with Forest getting the 3 points against Sheffield United. From our perspective, it was a good chance for the manager to give players a few minutes. Obviously, Coleman came on. I think Young got a bit of a niggle at one point. I sort of saw the physio speaking to Dyche. The next minute, Coleman was coming on. We saw Chimiti come on with Ambeto in, two up front almost. And like you say, Pete Chimiti was effective. Lovely touch. He brought a ball over his head down at one point. Lovely, lovely first touch. But he was involved in the game. Beto, again, could have won a penalty for me. There was plenty of contact there. I think he doesn't help himself because he's quite dramatic in his falls, Beto. For someone who's about 6'12", he doesn't half sell a penalty, doesn't he? But I think he came on and was effective. Obviously, Seamus Coleman come on, Andre Gomez comes on, Onana comes on. So it was nice to use a bit of the squad. And it was nice for the away fans who travelled down there. I say in the numbers that there wasn't many away tickets floating around, that's for sure. But travel down there, another sellout on a Friday night, city kickoff time, to get a decent performance. And it was nice, wasn't it, Paul? The pressure was off us and it was all on Luton. And I think the narrative, we've discussed this ourselves over the last few weeks in terms of Luton have been painted as victims of the whole Premier League season in terms of the point deductions for ourselves and Forest and them being in limbo and not knowing what the true landscape is. But for me, they're the ones who benefited most from the issues that both ourselves and Forest have suffered in terms of the point deductions, because without those deductions, there's no relegation battle. And the three that came up will have gone down weeks ago. And that's the thing, really, isn't it? So from that perspective, I think the only real victims in the whole thing from our perspective are us. That's for sure, in terms of Everton fans. But Luton, like Pete said, Luton was always going to be a tricky place to go regardless. I know they've only had six wins all season, but you're never really sure how many goals you do need to come away with something a Kenilworth through this season.
Yeah, my son was the big gauge for me. My son's a sports journalist. So he's just graduated as a sports journalist in the last year. And he does a lot of, you know, previews and write-ups and things like that for various podcasts and fan sites and things like that. And, we went round to my brother's house to watch it, took my dad round there, and, you know, we had got Chinese, and we're all just sitting around just, you know, idly sort of watching it. There was no real sort of thing. And I say, after the match, we sort of, it was your man of the match. And I don't know, really. I hadn't really paid that much attention to it, which is mad, because we were just sort of, yeah, just plodding along. And that was that, really. And it's, he said, I couldn't do a write-up of it. He said, I wouldn't even be able to do it because I didn't even pay that much attention to it. And I said, I'd actually said to him earlier in the week as well, because he writes a thing for the Echo as well, for the fan jury on that. And I said to him about that when we were going into it. And I said, you do realise that this match is like only the second match in 3 years where we're not threatened by relegation, you know, where relegation's not a possibility. You had the Arsenal game after Crystal Palace, and then every game last season, obviously. And then now, and it's mental that stat on it alone is crazy. I agree with everything you said, really. It was great with bringing the subs on and things like that, and being able to do that. I agree with you completely about Chimiti. I think he does look like a prospect. And obviously, you know, he's come into this basket case of a season thinking, what the hell have I signed up to here? And the pressure that's been on him and Beto when Calvert-Lewin was out, you know, the injury. You know, the other thing as well you've got to remember is that the Dyches that's coped with quite a lot of injury. Decore and Calvert-Lewin have been out for, you know, a long period of the season. Your captain Seamus Coleman, you know, just the football side of things has been challenging and difficult as well. Never mind the off field stuff as well. So having to cope with all of that as well is a factor as well. But yeah, I think obviously Beto and Chimiti, we haven't seen that much of them. And I say again, it's a difficult one to judge in that situation when the expectation is there. Beto, when he first came on the League Cup, looked ace. He looked great. He was brilliant in that game, and he looked like he could be, you know. And I really liked his interview when he first signed, and that, like, he seemed like a really unassuming guy. And he did say at the time, he did actually say in that first interview, "I'm not a goal machine. I'm not going to score you millions of goals," he said, "but I will hopefully bring, you know, enough goals and bring other people into play that can score goals off me and things like that." And I think, as you say, that the penalty, I think you're right about him going down, because I think it probably, you know, might have been a penalty. But because he is so big, he's like a giraffe, and when he goes over, you see him go over. And it looks more dramatic than what it probably actually is. And he probably does play on it a little bit every now and again. Does go over maybe a little bit too easily now and then. But the thing is, you have to do that in the Premier League, because if you just carry on with the fella hanging off you, then they don't give a penalty. That's the size of it. They certainly don't give them to Everton anyway. So I think that both of those, Beto and Chimiti, I think overall-wise, I think that they're good additions to the squad, but we haven't really seen them, you know, in the best of circumstances yet. So hopefully, I mean, I'm assuming that they'll still be there next season. But it then becomes, you know, do you keep Gomez? Do you keep Young? Do you keep all of these sort of players? I think Gomez brings us something different, in that obviously he hasn't got the legs anymore, but he's got that ability to put his foot on the ball and slow things down and pick out a pass and do bits and bobs like that. And I never thought he'd, you know, he's another one that you just sort of thought, well, his Everton career is over, really. He's never going to play for us again. Yet he's come back into it and been great. Decore's been the same in and out. I think Decore and McNeil, I was like done with. I think they, you know, at one point, just like they're never going to play towards the end of Lampard's. They were just not going to. And then Dyche just sort of reinvented them effectively. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to be to be praised in the squad itself. Ashley Young, I think, is such a divisive player, you know, for Everton fans. I think some people hate him, some people like him, some people are fairly indifferent about him. But I've noticed quite a lot on, you know, the videos that they do, the tunnel access videos that they do. He's a real talker and a real, you know, he's got that experience, and you can see what a what an effect he must have in the changing room at talking to the players, especially the younger players and things like that. So, and Dyche clearly has got a relationship with him from having played with him earlier in his career and that lot. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him being offered an extra year as a, you know, as cover, because he covers a number of positions and things like that. If his body's up to it, then I think he'll probably be maybe offered another one, maybe even end up joining our coaching staff at some point if Dyche sticks around. I don't know. But yeah, I think, Luton was a dead rubber. The next two games are probably going to be, you know, similar-ish, really, that we don't really care that much. But maybe we'll see a few more young ones. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, Young was getting quite a bit of stick all game, wasn't he, for his Watford links. And I think, you know, he can take anything like that. But, you know, the last few weeks, I think he's done well. Sean Dyche likes players that he can trust, and he's one of them, especially with Seamus Coleman's injury issues this season. He likes, you know, likes a Tarkowski and Ashley Young to be on the pitch. So Young maybe gets a 12-month contract extension. We'll see how that plays out. But obviously there's uncertainty around Seamus Coleman, whether he's going to sign a new deal, whether he's going to retire. We, you know, given the fact he's had a couple of bad seasons now with injury, hasn't he? You know, I think as he started five games something this season, which is not many at all. So he struggled a lot. So I'm expecting a decision on Coleman this week, given the fact it's our final home game against Sheffield United on Saturday. So it would be nice if he says, listen, now's the time to call it a day, that he gets the, you know, a fitting send off from the Everton fans at Goodison Park. So I would expect something to come out this week on Seamus Coleman. Let's not let it drag on like some, you know, Jagielka and Osman always go back to. They were never sort of told, were they? And then it gets after the end of the season, and then that was that. Leighton Baines didn't want a fanfare. That's Leighton Baines, isn't it? But Seamus Coleman certainly deserves that recognition from the Everton fans, if that is the decision to call it a day. But there's not really much more to cover on Luton, because like I say, it was so relaxed. You know, we could argue because I've had two penalties. McNeil, for me, was a penalty. When you see Kai Havertz for Arsenal yesterday get a penalty, and you look at McNeil and you think there was more contact on Dwight McNeil than there was on Havertz. But there we go. But obviously, looking ahead, we've got an already relegated side to come to Goodison Park in Sheffield United. You know, they put up a bit of a fight yesterday against Forest. You know, they could have arguably been sort of 3 or 4 ahead at half time. You could argue the chances that they had, and then the second half they capitulated and lost the game. Massive win for Forest, which probably consigns Luton and Burnley to the Championship, you'd think, next season now, based on that, you know, the points and how many games are left. But it's another game piece, isn't it, for us to, you know, hopefully, you know, another 3 points, because we know places are important in terms of from a money perspective. We know that it's good to end the season at Goodison Park on a win. And it's certainly a game that we should be going into looking to pick up all 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. And look, it'd be good to have a final home game of the season that we we can enjoy, and we can give the players a, you know, a good kind of send off, and it doesn't have that terrible pressure of, you know, of Bournemouth or you know, Crystal Palace. And at the risk of stating the obvious, Sheffield United, they just leak goals, don't they? They're just the epitome of a relegated side, in that, you know, lots of endeavour, but just don't take the chances. And they're just so leaky at the back. And Chris Wilder, he's experimented with so many different systems and, you know, centre-back pairings, and Holgate, you know, was in and out of that side several times. But whatever they try, they just can't seem to get any consistency of a clean sheet. So we all know what's coming next weekend. But no, look, joking aside, yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. You know, let's maybe give some players a little bit more game time. Let's just try and, you know, enjoy our football. You know, it'd be great to get a clean sheet and win by 2 or 3 goals. And then, yeah, hopefully look at the Arsenal game and see if we can still have a say in the title race and cause a bit of an upset, which would be nice. But I think we'd all probably be going to Arsenal with fairly low realistic expectations based on the last however many times we played them, at last game of the season.
Well, they're a funny side, Sheffield United, aren't they? Because I think there's a couple of times this season when I watched them, and you know they brought in Diaz, didn't he? Used to be at Blackburn, made a real impression. They had the likes of McAtee, who seemed to be doing okay. And there was times I think when he sort of threatened to go on a bit of a run, and they brought in Chris Wilder, and we all thought, here we go. You know, this is what they need, is this management change, and he knows the club, he knows the Premier League as well. But they shipped 100 goals this season, and you shouldn't laugh, but that's incredible to ship 100 goals in a season. You know, that's nearly not far off 3 goals a game. I can't get over that, and that's the problem, isn't it? You know, when your side that comes up, and to be fair, they had all kinds of off field issues themselves. The owner had checked out, hadn't he? And I think that, you know, he'd sort of wanted to spend more time with his family, and he's out of the country, and the work in pre season wasn't really done for them to really come into the Premier League and have a good go. You know, you look at the likes of when Forrest came up and spent a lot of money and got done for doing so. There was no sign of that really at Sheffield United. You know, Tom Davis arrived, didn't he? They brought in Mason Holgate in January, again, on loan from ourselves. They signed Diaz. They did a bit of work, but you still couldn't, you know what, that's it's pretty weak. And at the back, it's weak. And in the Premier League, you just can't afford it to sort of carry passengers and have players that aren't up to it, and you've got to really start at the back and be competitive and be difficult to beat. And when you can see in 100 goals and the season's not even over, you know, that tells you all that you need to know. And I think they will have times probably in the game against us. They showed against Forest, you know, that they will have moments, I'm sure, because attacking wise they're all right. But I think Everton have got to be looking to go and win that game and sign off our season at Goodison Park in the right manner. And again, the pressure's off, Paul, isn't it? Of course, you know, it doesn't mean a great deal, but I think as a fan base and the players themselves, you know, need to do themselves justice. But as a fan base, it would be nice, wouldn't it, for us to get a little bit of a thank you on that last game of the season at Goodison Park.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, the atmosphere had already changed a little bit at the Brentford game, I think, beforehand. You didn't have that sort of tension around the ground beforehand because, as I say, we do the drop-ins at St. Luke's, so we're there a couple of hours before kickoff, setting up in there. And yeah, just there seemed to have been a big weight lifted, because I think, if I remember rightly, I think a draw probably would have done us, you know, goal difference-wise, you know, not 100%, but probably safe. And then we went and won anyway, like, but yeah, I think that's what I think I'd like to see this weekend, and see just fans with smiles on their faces and just not that whole air of just worry around the place, and which we've had for just far, far, far too long now. So, yeah, on the pitch, you know, again, might be a chance to give a chance to some of the kids that have been on the bench the last few games. I know Dice isn't massive on doing that, but you'd like to think that, you know, it's one of those things where he's got that option at least. And I say, just when you're just talking, and I just pulled up the league table to have a look, because I don't really pay attention to other teams. I only really look at us. And, you know, we're like 21 points clear of Sheffield United, even with an 8-point deduction. Is crazy. You know, we're way, way, way above them, you know, in terms of anything else. But, you know, I mean, they gave us a tough time earlier in the season. So, again, it's one of them, isn't it? You know, you never know how it's going to happen. But I say the fact that the pressure's off, and the fact that, as you say, we can't really go up. I mean, we're not really expecting anything from Arsenal. So even if we win this game and that lot, we'd be level on points with Palace, and they've still got 3 games to play. So we're not going to move anywhere in terms of the actual table. So yeah, hopefully it's just a nice freeing afternoon where, you know, we can see what the players can do when there's no pressure on their shoulders and that. And the same with the fan base. It'll be a much more jubilant sort of atmosphere than what it's been. And that adversity and all of that is all lifted. So, and as you say, everyone's going to be thinking about 777. I have to say, it's one of the first things I do when I get to my seat in Goodison every game, is to take a photograph of the front row of the box to find out who's actually there from 777 or someone else or anything like that. And that I don't want to be doing that. I want to be watching the match, but just from a fan advisory point of view, from trying to see what's going on with the club. 777 haven't been there for the last few games. I should add, the last few home games. I think the last one that they attended was down in London. So, yeah, we'll see what happens on that side of things. But yeah, on the pitch, I'm just looking forward to just being able to just watch a nice, relaxing game of football with my friends and family around me. It's going to be delightful.
I think it did read, was it the Athletic said, or the Echo said, that there was someone at Luton from 777. Not Josh Wander, but there was somebody there. I'm not sure what his role was.
They've got a couple of Joshes. There was another Josh fellow was there last with Mashiri that London game, I think it was.
Yeah, so. He was still there. They're still lurking in the background somewhere.
They are obviously clearly still involved. And I'm saying, just going back to that very briefly, I said, I think the reason that Mashiri's persisting with him is because I think they're the only ones that are going to offer him any money. I think that's what it basically comes down to. I think that, others might be in the wings, but, Mashiri's basically just thinking, I've just got to try and get something out of this now. And that can be the only reason, but hopefully, even he'll realise the writing's on the wall and we can move forwards in some direction anyway.
Fingers crossed. But in terms of obviously league placing, like you say, the chances are we're not going to go up, but if we can cement this 15th position, because we're a point clear of Brentford. Brentford are away at Bournemouth on Saturday. We're at home to Sheffield United. So we can cement 15th, which is, it sounds terrible, but it's massive just to have that extra place to post a 16th just for a few million quid more. But fingers crossed, obviously it goes our way. But let's have our predictions if we can. Paul, what are we saying? Saturday against Sheffield United?
I think, I don't know, 3-0. I think we'll win 3-0. I want Chimiti to score. I don't care about anyone else, but I'd like Chimiti to get a goal.
It would be nice to see a few goals and obviously him to get off the mark as well for the season. But got to be said, hasn't played many minutes in the Premier League, that's for sure. Pete, prediction?
I was going to say exactly the same, with the same nod to Chimiti as well. It would be good to see him get a little bit more football and, great if he was able to get on the score sheet.
I'll say 2-0. I certainly think we can win, or we should win the game. It doesn't mean anything, of course. End of the season, no pressure on them because they're already down, no pressure on us. But I'd like to see us go out in a little bit of style, that's for sure, and enjoy that last home game. Like you say, Paul, a bit more relaxed, just enjoying being at the match with obviously friends and no anxiety, no pressure. But all I know is it's going to be probably another couple of busy weeks before the season ends off the field, no doubt. Fingers crossed we can get everything sorted out and start to look forward. We've got a fabulous stadium waiting for us on the banks of the Mersey there. We're not too far away from getting the keys to that. We're talking sort of 7-8 months now and we should have those keys. So big future for Everton, but a lot of things to sort out, of course, as Sean Dyche said. A lot of things to sort out off the pitch as well. But that's us for today. Appreciate everyone listening. Paul, thanks for coming on a Sunday morning.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
And we'll be back ourselves next weekend to look back on that Sheffield United game and look ahead to the final game of the season, obviously away at Arsenal in what will be, I'm sure, a title-defining game for them. But obviously, a lot of pressure off our shoulders, that's for sure, for the first time in a long time. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.